So, beginning, please sit comfortably, should you so choose. I want to look with you at this whole series of koans. Jojo, teaching the assembly, said, "The ultimate path is without difficulty. Just avoid picking and choosing. As soon as there are words spoken, this is picking and choosing. This is clarity. This old monk does not abide within clarity. Do you still preserve anything or not?" At that time, a monk said, "Since you do not abide within clarity, what do you preserve?" Jojo says, "I don't know either. Since you don't know, teacher, why do you nevertheless say that you do not abide within clarity? It is enough to ask about the matter. Bow and withdraw." Well, the monk really, Jojo, turns out, seems to have stepped in it a little bit. Later, a monk said to Jojo, "The ultimate path has no difficulties. Just avoid picking and choosing. What is not picking and choosing? In the heavens and on earth, I alone am the honored one." The monk said, "This is still picking and choosing." Jojo said, "Stupid oaf, where is the picking and choosing?" The monk said to poor beleaguered Jojo, "The ultimate path has no difficulties. Just avoid picking and choosing. Isn't this a cliché for people of these times?" Jojo said, "Once someone asked me, and I really couldn't explain it for 5 years." Today, a monk asked Jojo, "The ultimate path has no difficulties. Just avoid picking and choosing. As soon as there are words and speech, this is picking and choosing. So how do you help people, teacher?" Jojo said, "Why don't you quote the saying in full?" The monk said, "I only remember up to here." Jojo says, "Well, it's just this. The ultimate path has no difficulties. Just avoid picking and choosing." What is this business of picking and choosing? What is this business of avoid? The first question I ever asked a Zen teacher, I went to see him in Dokusan, and I said to him, "How does one make a choice?" And he looked at me and said, "The great way is not difficult. Just avoid picking and choosing." And then he leaned in and said, "I like chocolate ice cream. I don't like vanilla." And rang me out. I thought this was particularly interesting because obviously he's mistaken as to ice cream flavors. Where's the picking and choosing? And there is picking and choosing. Part of my practice of picking and choosing includes trying to be a kind and good partner to my spouse rather than a jerk. I usually try to choose the first of those when it's an option. I usually try to choose to cross the street when a car isn't coming directly at me. And I often choose to sleep at night when I'm tired. This isn't actually what happened last night, however. We don't always get our choices. Our translation of this talks about being unattached to preferences. Preferences arise. Preferences are just other glowingly beautiful dharmas in this one bright pearl of the universe. bushes and walls, hedges and trees, choices and picks. All just the universe universing. And so how can we partake in this? How can we explore this without getting turned by this, without getting enslaved to picking and choosing? This series of koans, I really like, and I really feel for Jiajiao. He's really doing his best to just give absolutely everything that is precious to him. He is not sparing even an iota of the Dharma assets. He is doing his best. He is called upon by causes and conditions, by circumstances, by karma, to teach, to lead, to open his mouth and express, to point to the entire dragon of a universe by holding up its tail. One modern teacher, I think it's Katagiri Roshi, has a book called You've Got to Say Something. And Jiajiao is so valiantly taking this up, so with such a heart of service, such a heart of meeting us. And all the teachers, all the ancient masters, all the Buddhas and ancestors, and all of the authors of what has come down to us as koans and liturgical pieces, these are all people exactly like us, doing their absolute very best to be as plain and clear and straightforward as possible. But we can't hear it till we hear it. We don't see it till we see it. And then we see it and we realize from the beginning, it's always been right there. All of our teachers, all of the ancestors have been telling us again and again, form is exactly emptiness. Emptiness, exactly form. There is great freedom in the Dharma. There is great freedom in the Dharma. And the freedom that we can count on is a freedom that doesn't depend on feeling one way or not some other way, seeing one thing and not some other thing, being some kind of being and not some other kind of being. This is the freedom to be bound when we're bound. This is the freedom of can't. I try to do this, but I can't. I try to never struggle, but I can't. I try to make my mind into something else, but I can't. Yes. Yes, we can't. This path requires everything of us. And it requires nothing more than doing what we can, when we can, in the amount we can. It doesn't ask us to do what we can't. It doesn't ask us to do it before it's possible for us to do it. And it doesn't ask us to do more of it than we are in fact able to do. Embracing ourselves as karmically limited beings. There's so much that would be different if only everything were different. But everything isn't. Everything is just like this. Picking and choosing. At one point, kind of early on in my Zen training, when I lived in a pretty militaristic style Zen monastery, on Sundays, would there be Sunday morning service, and then afterwards the community of residents and also the community of people who came for the service would enjoy lunch. And there were, this was a monastery in New York, so one of the things that was available at each of these lunches was bagels. This was such an angsty time for me. This was such a burning up and being confused and sitting in so much excruciation so much of the time. I remember so often standing at the threshold of the Zendo on the first night of Sesshin, about to step in, thinking, don't make me go in there again. It's going to be me again. Can't I just leave that out? And I noticed something at a certain point. Each Sunday after the service, there was spaghetti, there was sauce, there was various breads, and there were bagels. And I would take a cinnamon raisin bagel. And at a certain point, I had an insight that was really useful to me. Now, the thing about the thing about Dharma insights is they rarely are what they claim to you to be. Ah, yeah, God, I so get it. Rarely is that true. And the more, for me, the much more lasting kinds of insights are not necessarily the huge cosmic theological style insights into the nature of being, but very much smaller, much more intimately received, intimately experienced. This practice of receiving ourselves moment after moment, intimately just turning toward what is in fact here. This gesture is so small as to be almost invisible, so small as to be almost trivial, but it's not. This path is really not nothing. So my insight on this one particular Sunday morning was, as I was reaching for yet another raisin bagel on a series of Sunday mornings, was this. I like raisin bagels. And this is what, there's a, the release of this. You know, I was imagining I should be some kind of being without preferences. And I was trying so hard, as I ate my raisin bagel, to be this being without preferences. But it's just that. It's just our lives. It's just each moment. So, this monk asked Jiaozhou, the ultimate path has no difficulties, just avoid picking and choosing. But as soon as there are words and speech, this is picking and choosing. So, how do you help people, teacher? Such humility here. And so beautiful to see that what's pulling, that what's pulling this monk is the call to be of service, to serve people through the vehicle of the Dharma, to love people through the context of the Dharma. How can I do that? Isn't that picking and choosing? Joshu says, why don't you quote this saying in full? This this question that Joshu asks, reminds me of there's a koan in the Gateless Gate in which the monk says, he says something, let us, for the sake of argument, assume that he has said, the great way is not difficult, just avoid picking and choosing. And the master asks, are you quoting the Shinchin Me? And the student says, yes. And the master says, you have misspoken. How has he misspoken? Those are the words of the Shinshin Ming. Why don't you quote the saying in full? Why don't you really say this? Why don't you fully express it? The monk says, in all kind of honesty and humility, I only remember it up to here. And Joshu meets him. You know, the ultimate path has no difficulties. Just avoid picking and choosing. Why is it the saying in full when Joshu says it? But only 80% when the monk quotes it. And how can we quote it in full? How can we make this path, this practice, this tradition not something outside, not a should, not a supposed to, not an ought to, not a maybe people will like me, if. But how can we let it be an expression of our actual selves, our actual karmically limited selves? The great way is without difficulty, just avoid picking and choosing. Even amid picking and choosing. Thank you all for your spirits and your presence and your open hearts and for choosing to come here and for choosing to meet each other and for and I encourage you to come forth in a practice of generosity and meet ourselves and each other in this Dharma dialogue.
So you're in the line for the bagels, and you mentioned to the guy in front of you that you really like the cinnamon raisin bagels. He says, "Oh, so do I." He takes the last one. How do you work with that?
Yeah. Present to the arising of my... Oh! Some days, some years, and some decades of my life, oh man, come on! I just said that! And other times what arises for me is, yeah, I want that. And I don't need it to go my way. And as to which of those comes forth first, or how much later the second follows the first, what a mystery. and in fact, there's no picking and choosing on my part in which of those comes forth.
And Josh, you talk about which comes forth, and I recall periods in my life when I was applying for things to get in pottery shows and stuff, and I would get a lot of rejection letters, and I would go first to, this is fine. cool. And then I would notice I was sort of depressed, and a couple days later I'd say, what's going on? And so then I would come to, how dare you not? So we don't always know which comes first, and appreciate both sides.
Well, this really points to the teaching from yesterday about no rule books, you know, there's no guidebooks for this, but there is a lot of opportunity because you get to see your own patterns. You know, and every one of us is unique in that, and unique moment to moment. Mm-hmm. I think that's the other thing to realize, that I can't say, oh, I always react this way. Because, as we said yesterday, it's just kind of messy and surprising. Yeah. Thank goodness.
And important to also remember, to also notice that, oh, how dare they! And, oh, I don't need it to get my way. It's not the case that one of those is good and one of them is bad and wrong. No preferences, even in our preferences. Yeah,
Karen. I was appreciating that image of the threshold at the monastery, and I was totally right there with you. I remember that feeling of, like, this is going to be excruciating. And also, when you were talking about the bagel, I just really got the tenderness of that bagel.
And that there have been times when I've ridden to Sesshin with various Sangha members in Boundless Way, and one of them, you know, having heard me and other people talk about how much dread arises in advance of Sesshin, he said to me, "I don't dread Sesshin. Am I doing it wrong?"
Yeah, I think that's so important as we... one of the things that I think is important about our boundless way is really acknowledging this underside of this places where we get stuck. And I think sometimes we talk so much about that if you're not stuck, you might be thinking, you know, gee, I'm not one of the gang. of course, the instruction is wherever we are, it's the same. And the one of the surprising things, I think, for me is to notice that I don't just resist the difficult dark, I resist the openness and light, that it's actually quite a challenge to sit in the middle of brightness without attaching to it, without wanting it to go on. So really want to encourage whatever place you are in, the instruction applies to you.
And the one of our recitations describes the practice of Shikantaza. And amazingly, it's slipping my mind a little bit. But when enlightenment comes, we sit still, upright and unmoving, in the middle of enlightenment, with no preference for it. When delusion comes, we sit still in the middle of delusion, upright and unmoving, with no aversion to it. And we can say also, when when aversion comes, we sit upright and unmoving in the middle of our aversion, with no aversion to it. And when aversion for our aversion comes,
and then what?
And then
get it up to there.
And the beauty of it is that it doesn't matter whether you're doing it on the first then, the first mind moment, the first layer of aversion, or the 85th. Coming back, that one layer at any point is the entirety of it. This truth never fails.
One of my favorite lines in the newest koan in the series that you read at the end is when he says, "This is all that I can remember." And I think that's a very significant point, because we can't actually know what we don't know. I hope everybody knows that.
I couldn't hear that.
We can't know what we don't know. And, you know, so it's kind of wonderful. We have just pretty much one thing we say. And we say it in many, many different ways. And then every once in a while somebody comes in and says what we've been saying, but it's owned. And it's all they know. And it's just a delightful moment. If we were attached to trying to get our point across, that might get in our way. But we just keep saying it over and over. And then whatever we remember is what we know.
I love the story about the cinnamon and bagel. I feel like my session days kind of revolve around the sesame seeds at lunch. You know? Because I get really excited when I see them coming. When I put them on the rice, you know, before I get to eat them, I can smell them, you know, and it's like, oh man, like, that's it. I prefer that.
You know, as you say, we can't tell what's going to show up, whether it's the, that was my bagel, or it's the, I can handle this. And yet, what I love about practice is that it sort of trains me. It's like a relentless dog trainer. It's like, because when the, that was my bagel comes up, I suffer a lot, you know, and other people suffer, and then I kind of watch it play out. And it's like, when I do this over and over again, there is a kind of wearing away that happens.
Yeah.
But not because I can will it, not because I choose it. It's just like, oh, here it is again. Whack! And it's just practice.
That's so important to point to the wearing away.
Yeah.
Because we do feel like we're supposed to do something.
Yeah.
And it's more of a participating or a coming together with than a doing.
Yeah, and that's also such a nice expression of the it's not nothing, this sitting here and doing, not doing. It's not nothing. It's real and it's valuable. But it doesn't mean you don't go, oh, my bagel!
Right. It's almost like just letting practice work on me, and then I'm just here.
Yeah.
Or letting practice work on practice.
Yeah.
I think that's another translation of the Sashin Dewey.
Yeah.
Worn away, ground up.
Like sesame seeds.
Okay.
The expression that I, the metaphor I use for that is standing off my corner. So, it's usually people you're in a really long-term relationship with. My spouse has standed off my corners. My children have standed off my corners. Because it's relentless. You know, like those rocks on the beach. You know, those really round rocks, and I know what they used to be, and they're also the same kind of thing. It's just been sanded off by other forces.
And the thing for me is that I really like this idea. It sounds really sweet. But when it actually happens, what do you mean? that there really is some... it hurts.
Yeah.
I mean, because these are things we actually are attached to. That was my corner. Thank you very much.
And there's a little subtle point here about being willing to be sanded off. Mm. That if we're, it's okay to pull back in those moments too, as long as we're awake to the pulling back. Like, we're not asking everybody to just, you know, tumble up the beach or, you know, to walk into the sendo with that agonized feeling. Sometimes, you know, just to appreciate the hesitation. We don't know what's on the other side. It's pointing again to, I don't know the rest of this quote. But we know there's something pulling us that's like not, it's not cognitively conscious. But it's like a very strong force. And, you know, we know, some of us know, that when we get sanded off after the pain is over, it's a big relief. But we can't actually ask you to do that work. But we can ask you to feel the unwillingness to do it. That's really important, right? Yeah. So all of it points back, right, to the everything is it.
And so... Be awake to the unwillingness and the pulling back. And sometimes you're not awake.
Yeah.
And the beauty of this is that you don't have to be awake until it is possible for you to be awake. This is doing what you can when you can, not doing it before you can. And then when that moment of awareness arises... That is self-liberation. There's nothing you therefore need to do or go back retroactively and fix. It's all right there already.
Do I get to talk again?
Well, Ken and Steve also raised their hands. So.
Oh, I'm just... This. Oh,
yes, you do.
I'm sorry.
We get excited too.
Oh, this totally elucidates my sump pump Thanksgiving. That on Thanksgiving morning, the sump pump in the crawl space died, and it started filling up with water. And there's just this tiny little entrance to get in, so my husband can't fit in. I can fit in.
Yeah, that might be a story.
So I'm squirming in, and in order to get in, there's no possible way the human body can do this gracefully. So, you know, it drops off, and so as I'm trying to get in, I fall. And I'm down in the water, this icy cold water, you know, and I'm like, reacquainting myself with every swear word I know, and I have this little bucket, like a sand pail, and I start to bail and bail and bail, and as fast as I bail, the water's still coming in, it's, and right in the middle of it, I'm like, oh, this is the hell realm, right? This is it. But it still had to play out, you know, you can't just step out of it. And so I continued bailing and swearing and bailing and swearing until finally I gave up because it was just not going to happen. But the next day when I came back to it, it's like it had played itself out, and then I could just go ahead and fix it. Yeah. Somehow that seems to be what you're saying. You can't stop it until it's done. Thanks.
Ken and Steve?
My experience in this is very similar to this, is that the picking and choosing, it's often I feel it happens without me or to me. The choosing happens, and I don't choose the choosing. I find myself, choosing something, and if I don't get it, it really hurts. And it's like, I don't want to choose this, but it happens to me. It reveals where I've, on some level, I've already chosen. Well, I can't even say that I've chosen it. Just the choosing has happened, and I find myself in the hell of either get it or usually not getting it. And it's like, how did I get here? It isn't that I chose it. I'm caught in the choosing. Choosing chose me. So there's a sense that it's beyond our control, but we are there to be present and awake to that whole process unfolding. Because, the pain I go through at times in Sashina is I didn't choose that, but there's some level that I need to experience that choosing that's taken place, whoever did it.
Since it's taken place, you have no options but to experience it.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
for me, that opens like two things. I mean, absolutely. Sometimes I call it eating other people's karma. Things happen that we're caught up in that we didn't really have any volition in. At the same time, often it's mistakes were made. when we did actually have a hand in it. And discerning the two is sometimes helpful. Not always. Sometimes you just have to, muck about in the sump pump corner and reacquaint yourself with all the swear words. I think that's a very valuable, skill to have.
Is that on YouTube now?
Yeah, honey, can I film you?
Let's hear from Steve, and then I think Derek had his hand up.
So, Josh, I really appreciate the part of your talk where you were saying how this not picking and choosing doesn't at all mean that we don't care. We care so much, and our practice is to continue doing our best, and how we keep running into this, I can't do what I set out to do. It struck me how, even if we manage to fix the thing that we're complaining about, there's always another thing, that it's a product of this caring and trying to do our best. Is of course, we want to do a little better, and there's always this can't, that I keep running into over and over again. This I can't do it, and how just the practice of just meeting this over and over again, and this isn't something that can go. It can't go away, right? It's not possible to both care and stop running into this. I can't.
Yeah. And this is the opting in practice of the Bodhisattva path.
And just to own I can't fully is its own practice, because you can't. I can't. I was realizing too I had a thought arise about this thing about you don't have to be awakened. You don't have to be awake. You know, this is really an important point. And the other corollary to this is we don't know if we're awake in the moment. Mm. If we think we are, well, certainly come to Doksan, but you can't know internally what being awake feels like. So we are endlessly deluded about awakening. Mm. I think that's also a famous quote. But it's not a problem. This is the bottom line. It doesn't matter. This practice appears to have its own trajectory that we can participate in fully, but I can't do it. That's right. I just when I think I can, I shrink. Mm. When I think I'm awake, I shrink. Yeah, it's not for me to know.
Yeah. And this not knowing that Melissa's pointing to, that they can't tell when we're awake. Dogen says two things. He says regarding it doesn't necessarily arise as a view. It doesn't necessarily arise as an experience. And elsewhere he says, this actualization may come before the recognition of it.
Derek can ask us.
Yeah.
One of the things this practice helps me do is just laugh at myself, but not in a dismissive way.
You know?
I forgot the counts for how many people were going to be here, so I ended up buying way too much food, and found myself, you know, beating myself up before it began. I failed before it began, and you know, I said it before, like, I know the next retreat's going to be better, the next one. I'll be happy. I noticed after I was done beating myself up enough, I was just like, it's ridiculous. Why can't you do that?
Yeah. After you were done beating yourself
exactly.
up. Yeah.
But I had to beat myself up.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So one closing comment, perhaps, from Susan.
At least you didn't serve people half-cooked eggs.
Whoa!
You know who you are.
Susan.
This discussion reminds me of a wonderful book called Waking Up to What You Do by Diane Rossetto. And a couple of years ago, Josh chose it as the text for the precepts group. But and it's there's so much good stuff in it, but as far as I can recall, the main thing was we have these triggers, and sometimes it's about things that are as trivial as what kind of bagel do I want. But then you get in situations where the trigger acts the same, but the situation is this the daughter-in-law I really want? And it's a qualitatively different thing about the bagel and the relative. This is the relative you have. This is a human being with vulnerabilities and a heart, and you can't just let that trigger keep triggering without trying to do something about it.
Yeah.
And if all you can do is beat yourself up, then beat yourself the hell up. Try not to do it, you know, every time. I just think that was such a helpful idea to introduce.
Yeah. And you're pointing to the urgent importance of the Bodhisattva heart. Mm-hmm. that is of utmost importance.